The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came and called out, "Have pity on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is tormented by..." But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. Jesus' disciples came and asked him, "Send her away, for she keeps calling out after us." He said in reply, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of..." But the woman came and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." He said in reply, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Please, Lord, for even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters." Then Jesus said to her in reply, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be your wish." And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
When I was in high school, I had an arch nemesis, and it was awesome. We were counter opposites of each other constantly through high school, battling against each other. It was great having a rival like that. It kept you on your toes. It challenged you to grow and to constantly be in competition, to build yourself up. His name was Alan Barker. And Alan and I, we were polar opposites. Here I was, very studious, straight-A student, going to sports teams, playing on those teams. Alan was a goth. You know, dressed all in black, kind of that depressing environment around him. Didn't really try at school, although I would contend that Alan was way smarter than I was. Very brilliant man, very intelligent man, caring much about his academics. But the thing that separated us the most, the arena that we fought in the most, was religion. Going to a very small public school, everyone knew that I was a very strong Catholic. I very much was in love with the faith, and many people knew that I was discerning priesthood even then. Alan, however, was an avowed atheist, very much blaming religion for many of the world's woes, wanting to eradicate faith. And we had some epic battles over our 4 years in high school. One of them was in government class. There was a project where we had a debate about whether or not abortion should be legal in our country. So I gathered all of the, you know, good Christians, good Catholics in our class together, you know, and we were promoting the pro-life cause and fighting against abortion. And Alan got, you know, his crew together, you know, and we had this epic debate, and of course I trounced him. I mean, it was no contest. I mean, it was easy victory. But Alan had his revenge. The next year, he put together a club, an official club at the public school, called the Philosophers Club. And in this club, they promoted philosophers like Nietzsche and these guys that wanted to say that God was dead, that religion shouldn't exist. So to counter this, I tried to form my own theology club, a club that would discuss God's existence and his goodness. Well, believe it or not, high school kids aren't very interested in theology club, and so my club kind of dissipated, and Alan's did very well. And so he won the day on that one. But all through those 4 years, despite our differences and our debates, we held a very cordial relationship to one another. We very much enjoyed these conversations and these arguments that we would have back and forth, sparring against each other. And when we got to our senior year, I remember one distinct conversation that we had. I was already getting ready to join seminary. You know, I had had my application in. I was ready to go. And I was sitting down with Alan Barker, and I remember him looking at me, and he said, "Danny, I don't get it." And I was like, what don't you get, Alan? And he said, "Danny, I know you. You're a very intelligent young man. You're very talented. You could do whatever you wanted to do, go to whatever college you wanted to go to. You could do so much for the world. You could be a doctor or a lawyer or a civil servant. You could help humanity so much with these gifts. And so I have to ask, why? Why are you throwing all that away and joining the priesthood?" And I looked at Alan and I said, "I'm joining the priesthood because I honestly believe that is the way I can best serve humanity. By showing them purpose and meaning in their life, showing them God in their life." And then I added on to that, I said, "And also, I honestly believe that by being a priest, I will find happiness. I will find my own fulfillment. I will figure out who I am, who God created me to be, who God is in my life. And I'll be happy." And for a moment, the shortest of seconds, I could see in Alan's reaction to that a longing. I could see in that moment that when I said those words, he wanted the same thing. But very quickly, he smothered that up, he hid it away, and decided that he would rather keep searching. He would rather keep wondering where his happiness was. He was not being fed. Now, Alan is not the only one in the world that is in that situation. When I was assigned to these two parishes in Terre Haute, one of the first things I did was I went online and looked up the demographic studies of Terre Haute, of Vigo County, specifically in the Department of Religion. What were the various religions, the various faith traditions of this county? And then I compared it to the United States and Indiana and all that, just trying to get a feel for what I was getting into. And I have to admit, I was very shocked by what I found. So on the level of the United States, about 76% of Americans have some faith tradition that they claim. Now, whether they're fully practicing or not is in question, but at least they claim a faith. Of the 70% to be Christian, 20% of Americans claim to be Catholic. One-fifth, we're the biggest denomination, which is good, that's great. But that still means that there's 22% of Americans that are unaffiliated. Almost a quarter of our population that are unchurched. Now, when I looked at Indiana, it was very similar. The demographics were very, very paralleled. In Indiana, 74% are affiliated with some faith tradition, so three quarters again. 72% are Christian, 18% of Hoosiers are Catholic. 26% are unaffiliated. They don't have a faith tradition that they cling to. And then I got to Vigo County, our county. And it was surprising. The percentage of our population that have some faith tradition that they claim, and again, whether they're practicing or not is beyond the point, whether they claim a faith, 32%. 31% of our people in Vigo County claim to be Christian, 7% are Catholic. That's 67% of Vigo County do not have a faith. 67% decide to be unaffiliated. They are listed as Now, I did the math on that. That comes to about 72,000 people that are unchurched. 72,000 people that are still searching, wanting to find truth in their life. Now, I have to believe, and I do believe, that God created all of them with some inherent part of them that wants that truth. They want to find God. That when God created them, He instilled in them that desire. It's there. They're empty. Until that's there, they are settling for the scraps that our world offers them, little fragments of the truth, little bits and pieces, joy that we have in our faith. Now we can look at that number, 72,000, we can say, well, that's just the state of the world that we live in. We can bemoan to live in such a time that so many people are unchurched. Isn't that just a sign of the times of the modern age that so many people do not practice their faith, do not even have a faith? We can go down that road, and so many do. Or we can do something about it. When I was in seminary, training to be a priest, we knew these numbers. You know, we knew what we were getting into. It would be quite the seminary to deceive us as we were training for this, only to let us loose into society and say, oh my goodness, I didn't realize it was going to be this hard. And there were times when we would get together and we would talk about that. Like, what can we do about it? And I have to admit, it was overwhelming. It was a bit depressing to look at those numbers and wonder, how are we going to reach those people? How are we going to make a difference? How are we going to bring them to God? And then one of my friends, who's now a priest, Father Juan Guido, he says something that has stuck with me ever since. He said, you know, because of this challenge, because of what stands before us, I think this is the most exciting time to be a priest in the church. This is the most exciting time to be a Catholic. Why? Because there's a work to be done. There's an opportunity before us to go forth as His servants, His missionaries, to bring souls, to win souls for Christ. And he says, that excites me. That makes me passionate about what we're doing. That makes me have a reason for this. And he says, I'm not going to forget that. Bye. And he's absolutely right. Now here's the reality. As much as I would love personally to bring 72,000 souls into the church, I realize I can't. There's limited ability in that. But thankfully I have all of you. Thankfully we are in this together as a church. Thankfully this is our mission, our responsibility, our church. And so when you look around in your life, just recognize that two-thirds of your coworkers, two-thirds of the people you go to school with, two-thirds of the people you see walking down the street are in need of what we have here. That we do not settle for scraps. We come here week after week and we feast on the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, God Himself, who comes to us and says to us, I am here for you. I knit you together in your mother. I give you purpose the world cannot give. I offer you everything that I have. And we have that. Now it's up to us to share that. Because the world is hungry. And we have the food. Now just in a few weeks, we're going to be having our stewardship campaign, our Commitment Sunday, for St. Patrick's Parish. And yes, I encourage you to bring in your pledge cards, time, talent, treasure. Awesome. That's what we need. We're on a mission. But more than that, I would strongly encourage you to seriously consider someone in your life that should be brought to this church, brought to Mass. I want you even now to think of a name of somebody in your life that could come here, that could benefit from this, that could grow in their experience of love because of this. And I want you to bring them. I want this church to be packed. I want it to be standing room only, week after week, to be a witness to the absolute beauty and power and glory of our God. I don't know whatever happened with Alan Barker. I lost track of him. I have no idea what ended up happening to him. But I'd like to think that he was fed. I would like to think that somebody introduced him to Christ. Amen.